start a recording and let me know when it has started.
Okay, please go ahead. We're now recording.
Thank you very much. Well, good morning, everyone. For those in the room and those participating remotely, we actually have a really small group of people here, but... yeah, we probably have more people remote than we actually have in the room, but that shouldn't make this meeting any less interesting and interactive, I hope. So we're just going to run through a short update that we've prepared on what's happening in relation to the inter-registrar transfer policy, and then just basically open it up for discussion and questions. And actually, you know, feel free during the presentation to jump in if you have any questions or comments. So very briefly, we're just going to run through four different projects that are currently ongoing. The first one is in relation to the IRGP Part B recommendations that were recently adopted by the ICANN board. Then there are two IRGP Part B recommendations that are in the process of they have received staff proposals, but these are currently under discussion, and we hope to finalize those shortly. These would then go to the GNSO Council for approval. Quick update on the IRGP Part C, and then there's also the THIC WHOIS issue report. So just a little bit of background, and I think we have maybe a couple of new people on the bridge. So we're just, because I think for most of you here in the room, you know what this is all about. So the inter-registrar transfer policy is a GNSO consensus policy that was adopted in 2004, and its objective is to provide a straightforward process for registrants to transfer domain names between registrars. As part of the implementation of that policy, it was decided to run a review and make sure that it was working as intended, and determine whether there were any areas that required improvement or clarification. And as a result of that review, a whole list of issues was identified, which were then chopped up in five different PDPs. And we're currently have just started work on the IRGP Part C. Might be of interest as well to mention that this is actually the number one area of complaint when it comes to complaints that are received by ICANN's compliance department. And I think they gave a presentation earlier this week that confirmed that this is really the by far the number one area of complaint. So the IRGP Part B working group completed its work by submitting its final report to the GNSO Council in May of this year. The GNSO Council adopted those recommendations, and a number of those were then forwarded to the board and adopted in August. So very briefly on the recommendations that were adopted as part of that that process. The first one is a requirement for registrars to provide a transfer emergency action contact, a new acronym also known as a TEAC. This is basically to address situations where an urgent response is needed, and it would require registrars to provide a response in a 4-hour time frame. Important to highlight that a response is just a response. It doesn't necessarily mean resolution of the issue, but it's at least a way of bringing registrars into contact with each other in cases such as hijacking, for example. Another recommendation relates to the modification of Section 3 of the IRGP to require that the registrar of record, also known as the losing registrar, will be required to notify the registered name holder or registrant of a transfer out. Currently, I think this is optional but not a requirement. I think the working group felt that this might be another mechanism by which a registrant might be alerted if a transfer is requested and the person is actually not the one requesting it or there's an issue with it, so that potential conflicts might be identified ahead of time. There's a specific language suggested for modification of reason for denial number 6. As in its current state, it was felt that it was not really clear what was intended and open to interpretation. And there's the deletion of denial reason 7, as it is currently written, it actually cannot even be used. So I'll just hand it over to Tim to talk about the implementation status of those recommendations.
Thanks, Marika. Tim Cole, Chief Registrar Liaison. The implementation status is once the board acts, it moves from the policy realm into the operations realm, and so our department is actively working on implementing the specific recommendations as they apply to registrars themselves. So we have drafted the modifications to the existing policy language based on the various recommendations, and Brian Peck has worked extensively on that, and he has they are now at under legal review so that we can make sure we've captured everything as required and done it in the proper legalese for the contract, et cetera. Marika pronounces it TAAC, I tend to pronounce it TX, so I don't know, we already have differences here between our departments. The functionality, there's a lot of discussion about how we functionally could implement that. And so based on some dialogue we had with members of the working group, we determined that we would use the registrar data system called RADAR to also support the functionality of the TAAC to the extent that registrars will be able to identify and list their transfer emergency action contact in RADAR, and then that contact will be available to all other registrars when they log into RADAR so that they can directly identify the TAAC at another registrar if they need to communicate with them. So in addition to that, then we have an additional functionality that is a form that can be completed online. I don't know, is that
yes,
available? Next slide. Okay, because I don't think I control that, but I control this. So this is the draft of what the form would look like that a registrar would log in, complete some information. We are going to be sharing this with the working group to see if we get any feedback about possible changes to it. This is a mock-up of what it would look like. But the idea is that the initial contact starting the TAAC process would be sent out from ICANN to the other registrar, and at that point a date and time stamp would be captured. And because the TAAC requirement has a very specific four-hour window for one registrar to respond to another registrar, this is the this would be the sort of the standard way in which that clock time frame will be documented should there end up being subsequent compliance concerns about it. But this form allows the registrar initiating the contact to designate their preferred means of contact, and the language of the message that will go to the other registrar will include the information supplied by the filing registrar as well as information about how to respond. McHaley.
Morning, Tim, and happy birthday, by the way. You're welcome. The one question in relation to this, and because one of the concerns that several of the registrars raised during discussions of the IRTP Part B recommendations was that ensuring that the transfer emergency action contact would only be used for actual emergencies and not to replace, you know, kind of normal communications. And in other words, just because somebody's a little bit lazy and couldn't be bothered doing their job, this shouldn't be used. So the one concern I would have with this, and I'm sure we can continue discussing this further in the working group and with yourselves, but just making sure that it is made very, very clear on this form, because that this is only for emergencies, and if they use it for other things, that will have consequences. Thanks.
Well, I'm not sure what consequences. There aren't any consequences written into the policy, but we certainly, if you want to draft some language for us to put on this form, we would gladly consider it. It hasn't been finalized yet, and that's why we're showing you the draft. So if you have, if what it says here is not adequate, we'll welcome, you know, your contribution, because we simply want it to serve the purpose as intended. Clearly, it can only be accessed within the radar system, so it's not a public contact for the entire world to access, but there is also a transfer contact within the radar system that is available now. So there would be two separate contacts, and certainly we can put language in here explaining the limitations for using this.
Yes, Tim, I mean, I'm not trying to labor the point. It's just that in terms of this contact thing, the main area of pushback that we got from our stakeholder group was in the kind of feature creep or scope creep of the emergency contact.
So tell us how you want us to do it.
Well, I mean, the main thing for me...
I'm not objecting. Just give us language and we'll be glad to use it.
I'm not saying that you are. It was just the key thing is that I wouldn't want this thing to come back and bite us on the rear end. But
well, Michele, you can continue to tell me that. I understand your concern, but I don't know.
Other than
giving you the opportunity to write the language that we use, I can't go beyond that. This is a policy that was adopted without any teeth to it, other than that you're required to follow, respond within 4 hours.
Well, the one suggestion I would make in that case is that this page in particular within the radar be available in other languages other than English, because I think that some people, if their first language is not English, they will miss the subtleties of a policy. So if this could be whatever language is decided on at the top of it, explaining what the purpose of the form, that be available in the UN languages.
We'll see how that can be accommodated. I'm not quite sure yet, but because radar is not translated in other languages, and there is no immediate opportunity for doing that because of the way it's structured. But I will ask our technical folks if there's a possibility for doing that.
I mean, the thing is, one of the common complaints that ICANN staff and compliance have is that they have issues with registrars who are not in the English-speaking part of the world. And if radar is a tool that is accessible to all registrars, then in my humble opinion, then that would be an obvious place to look at implementing something in terms of making it slightly multilingual. I mean, if it's an in-house built set of scripts and things like that, then surely it is customizable. That's just, to me, would just appear to be logical, and surely would help to remove some of the pain that you and your staff might be suffering due to a lack of communication or misunderstanding. Thanks.
Definitely understood. So that is the way we are technically going to support the implementation of the TX, so that it is not outside of, it doesn't just require that one, a he said, she said kind of tracking for the 4 hours. There's at least a way to identify the initiation of that, so that if it comes back later, we can identify that. As far as the language and wording, we're definitely open to suggestions, and I will, look into whether or not there are ways to put in different translations at this point. I'll have to talk with our technical folks about that. I don't have an answer for you right now.
So there's a question from James Bledel. It says, many transfer issues involve registrars who do not participate in working groups or attend ICANN. Is there an outreach communication plan to ensure that these folks are aware of changes to the IRTP?
Well, once we have the technical ability for the TIAC set up and the language for adoption in the policy itself, Then we have a requirement under the RAA to provide a reasonable notice for implementation, and we have a requirement to notify all registrars at that point in time. So there will be clearly a notification to all registrars at the point in time that it is in place, and you know, a deadline for complying with the implementation. So we have one communication mechanism for those under the 2009 RAA and a different communication mechanism for those under the 2001 RAA, so we'll have to follow both, which is one of the reasons that we want to do it all at once rather than trickle it out and say the policy language has changed here, but TIAC isn't ready for implementation. We want to implement all at once and have one announcement to clearly explain what all the changes are about. So I hope that answers your question, James. So do we have IRTP Part B recommendations requiring staff proposals? That's next. Turn it back to Marika.
So thanks, Tim, for that update. Let me just scroll further here. Oh. So now I'll briefly talk about there were two I have a little bit of echo here. Yeah, we're good? Okay. So just briefly talking about some of those recommendations that came out of the IRTP Part B working group that actually requested staff proposals before council consideration. So those deal specifically with the first one, clarification of who is status messages relating to registrar lock status was recommendation number 8. And the second one related to a new provision to lock and unlock domain names and relation to the removal of one of the denial reasons, there was a need to actually provide clarification as to how domain names can be locked and unlocked. So basically, staff has already prepared a second. Can we do something about the echo? Yeah? I don't have. Yeah, I have no mic on. It's not on the audio.
Is this right up here, this little? Or excuse me, I'm sorry, the mic here?
No.
Okay. All right, just... Yeah,
but my speaker's feedback. Off here, so... Okay.
Okay.
So staff actually... sorry, trying to fix some audio issues. Does anyone on the phone bridge have their speakers on their computer open and the phone line at the same time? If so, please mute one of the two. I think we're already better. Okay, so there's already a second draft of proposals that staff has prepared for feedback from the IRTP working group, and you find a link here. So we've basically looked at the working group's deliberations on these issues and come up with two proposals. And following some initial discussions with the working group, we've tried to address some of the questions and issues that were raised. And now in the second draft, there's still a number of issues that people have concerns about. So we're trying to work through those. But at the end of the day, I think at some point we need to decide whether, you know, there is working group support for this or whether, you know, there's just some disagreement, and that's something that can maybe be raised in the public comment period. Because the idea is following getting to a stage where we feel that the majority of people is comfortable with the proposals as they are, the idea would be to put those out for public comment and get community feedback on those proposals. And once that process is finalized and, you know, potentially any changes are further made to those proposals, these would then need to be considered and adopted by the GNSO Council before they then would go to the ICANN board for their consideration. And you know, if there's any interest to go into more detail into those specific proposals, you know, we can maybe do that at the end of the meeting. I have to go back here. So now we're briefly talking about the IRTP Part C PDP. this working group kicked off not too long ago. The council initiated a PDP at its meeting in September, and there's currently a call for volunteers open. You'll find the link here. The first meeting of this working group is scheduled for the 8th of November at 1500 UTC. So anyone interested in this topic, please share your details with Glenn, the GNSO secretariat, and she'll add you to the mailing list. The issues that this working group will be looking at is first of all, a change of control function. This is actually one of the issues that came out of the previous IRTP working group. They had quite extensive discussions in relation to this issue. It's currently, there's no definition of what a change of control means in the context of the IRTP. Michele, go ahead.
I suppose just because I've had a couple of people talking about this in the hallways and they're a bit confused by what we mean by change of control. As those of us who've lived the IRTP for the last 2 years know exactly what it is, but for those outside, so I mean, just in really, really, really simple terms, what do we mean by change of control, Marika?
I believe we mean change of registrant. So this is something that, for example, is defined in certain CCTLDs where it's specifically described how you can change registrant, but it doesn't exist in the IRTP or any other policy. And as a result, as I understand, a lot of people actually use the transfer functions to prove ownership and transfer ownership, and that causes certain issues that the previous working group felt needed to be explored, and an examination should be undertaken to see whether it would be appropriate or helpful to try to define this change of control or change of registrant function in the context of the IRTP. This is also linked to other reasons of denial. I think it's the 60-day lock following change of what does it say again in the IRTP? It's the change of registrant details, right?
No, there's nothing within the policy to cover a change of registrant details. There is in the policy to cover change of registrar, which is an inter-registrar transfer. The problem we had in IRTPB was we were asked to possibly examine a change of registrant prior to a transfer, but then when we looked deeper, we discovered that there was no policy in that area at all. So that's how we ended up with it in IRTPC, in part.
Right, but it specifies as well in the report that, you know, this consideration should be considered together with two of the reasons for denial, I think related to the creation of a domain name and being able to deny it in the first 60 days of creation, and as well this other denial reason, which I don't remember the exact wording, but it's also that 60 days, I think, after a transfer, you cannot immediately transfer it out again. I think that's it. So once it has been transferred, a registrar can deny a transfer if that takes place in the 60 days after initial transfer. James is saying correct. First 60 days and 60 days from previous transfer. So those issues need to be considered as well, together with the you know, change of control function. A second issue that's going to be considered in this working group is whether there should be provisions on time-limiting a form of authorization or FOAs, whether it should be implemented to avoid fraudulent transfers out. And if I understand this issue correctly, it relates to that a form of authorization can be submitted. A registrar potentially couldn't do anything with that, and you know, 3 years later, it could suddenly submit that request, and transfer out could happen, while it might not have been the intention of that happening so long after the date. Tim.
James wrote, "We're trying to enhance domain name portability while maintaining domain name security." So it's trying to find a good blend for both.
Right, that relates to specifically indeed to that first comment, and the IRTPB working group discussed it quite extensively but felt that more time we need to be given to this issue and exploration as well of maybe models that are being used in other, and especially country code TLDs on whether that would be something that could be applicable as well to the GTLD context. And a third issue relates to the question of whether there should be a process or whether the process could be streamlined by a requirement that registries use IANA IDs for registrars rather than proprietary IDs. As I understand the issue, currently registries assign proprietary IDs to registrars in addition to IANA IDs that exist for registrars, and that can cause confusion. Michele, go ahead.
Yeah, just to put this in context, as the losing registrar of a domain, you might receive an email notification from the registry to say that a domain, a transfer request has been received from another registrar, but a lot of the registries don't refer to the registrar either by their actual name or by their IAN ID. They refer to it by some randomly assigned proprietary ID that the registry has assigned, presumably following some kind of logic, but I see something like a reference to Z-cell-1. I have absolutely no idea who that is. Actually, that could be ours. I'm not too sure. But anyway, the point being that it would just be a little bit more helpful, because if you were to see kind of strange activity going on, it'd be a lot faster to identify things. But then at the same time, I don't think it's like a huge, huge, huge issue, but it's more a case of applying some kind of understandable standard of naming our assignment of these IDs in communications would be helpful for the rest of us who don't have staff of thousands. I think Adam actually might want to make a point on that. Adam?
I was just going to say it's an issue of standardization. When you have proprietary IDs, you know, everything from communicating to registrants or trying to report on things internally is difficult, and it seems to be a weird spot to have something entirely non-standard.
Right. So this is Rick, and I think James Bledel is asking the same question. Is this issue controversial at all? Presumably, it's mainly a question for registries, because I think they are the ones that assign, and currently they're proprietary, so I don't know if that's for a specific reason. I do know that but I don't recall by heart what they actually said, because they did submit some comments as part of the comment period on the preliminary issue report, but I think they went into some detail on their views on these different issues, so that's probably something the working group should take back and look at, and you know, we do have registry reps on that group, so maybe indeed it's a very easy issue to fix, or you know, maybe there are some concerns or some reasons why the system is as it currently is. Go ahead, Michele.
I mean, as far as I'm aware, I don't think it is controversial. I mean, it's one of the ones that, you know, we discussed it in IRTPB, mainly for kind of reasons that Adam would mention. It's not one of those kind of, the world is going to end if this isn't changed type issue. But that being said, if it's an easy thing to change, then why not change it? I suppose the other side to it as well is that as you enter into a world of new TLDs where there are potentially hundreds, if not thousands, of registries, having some level of standardization in these areas would probably help to clean up issues further down the line.
Well, it would actually be really nice if we have a non-controversial issue for a change.
It doesn't mean we talk any less, though, about it.
Well, Tim, I mean, if we don't spend 3/4 of an hour arguing over the positioning of a comma, it wouldn't be ICANN.
Just quickly looking, because I actually pulled up the registry's comment on this. So, you know, just for the sake of discussion, as we have plenty of time, they actually state that it is generally agreed that the registrar name changes often do make it difficult to ensure that the correct registrar is identified, and use of the IANA ID may be helpful in confirming registrar identification. At this point in time, all registries that provide monthly registry operator reports to ICANN are required to provide both the registrar name and the IANA ID to identify register information in the per registrar activity report file. So it's reasonable to think that all registries do maintain this information in their registration systems. The registry stakeholder group reserves further comment until more information is available, and specifically what aspects of the process could be streamlined by the requirement that registries use IANA IDs for registrars rather than proprietary IDs. Go ahead.
I mean, the thing there is that, you know, they're reporting it back to ICANN. ICANN sees it, but we the other registrars don't. So I think that's part of the reason why it would be a small issue for us, but not controversial.
I think all they're saying is that because they already use it in another variation on a different report, that it shouldn't be difficult to do here. That's the only thing I think they're mentioning.
Yeah. Okay, so you know that working group still has plenty of issues to discuss. So I'm sure we'll be coming back to that. So next, I just briefly wanted to mention the Thick Who Is issue report, and this actually follows on from a recommendation from the IR2P Part B working group to request an issue report on the requirement of Thick Who Is for all incumbent GTLDs. I think in the context of the discussions of the IRTPA as well as the IRTPB working group, I think there have been several notions of the fact that it would be really helpful in the context of IRTP to have Thick Who Is for all GTLDs. But at the same time, I think the working group realized that there might be other considerations that need to be taken into account before a recommendation is made that there should be such a requirement. So as a first step in that process, they recommended that an issue report would be requested to really scope the issue and you know, identify other aspects that might need to be considered before a recommendation would be made to actually require this of all GTLDs. So actually, in the process of preparing the issue report, the idea is to follow the new GNSO PDP that was adopted yesterday and actually prepare first a preliminary issue report that's then put out for public comment to ensure that we have provided all the information that is needed for the GNSO Council to take an informed decision and for community members also to express their views on whether a PDP should be initiated or not. So after that, we'll look at the comments received and update the report if deemed appropriate, and then the final issue report will be submitted to the GNSO Council, and then they'll need to take a decision on whether or not to go ahead and start a PDP. So just for those interested, how do you get involved? As I said, the IRTP Part C Working Group is looking for volunteers, so please sign up if you haven't done so yet. I think it's likely that this working group will follow previous practice and meet on a weekly basis for 60 minutes and work their way through the issues. So feel welcome to join. And here are links to some of the recent reports as well as the transfer policy. And that's it. Adam.
I had a couple questions, Tim, about what you were talking about, but we scooted to the next topic before I thought of them. Oh, sorry, Adam Eisner, Two Cows. Okay, never mind. Number one, and this has probably been discussed, so I apologize. What is? How do you define response for the TAC in terms of 4 hours? So a human versus an autoresponder, or does it matter? And B, any idea what the email that will go out kind of looks like? Because when I think about who's going to end up reading that email at 2 in the morning, it'll be someone, but it might not be someone as well-versed in the world of policy as, say, I don't know, me.
Yeah, we haven't drafted the actual language of the email yet, but we certainly will ask this working group for their input.
I think there is some language in the IRTP working group on what a response means. So I don't know, probably should look there at what is said there, because I think they wanted to avoid indeed that it would be an automatic email response saying, we received your email, please don't reply, that kind of response.
I can write pretty good autoresponders, so I don't know.
Well, I think that's a very legitimate question. The thing, at one point we were talking about this being a full loop system where you'd have to go online to file your TAC request. It would go out, and then the responding registrar would have to come back through radar to answer, and that would have been a way to completely prove it, but it's also a way to add potential significant hurdles to responding. And so after some discussion, we determined that we'll be the outbound, but the response would have to go directly to the registrar, and that's the most, presumably the most efficient way for work on a solution to be initiated as quickly as possible. Having said that, it's going to still be, to some extent, whether the initiating registrar, we probably have to come up with terms for which TAC is which at any given point, but the initiating registrar, as you say, an autoresponder does not satisfy the same thing as some other more personal response. So You know, to the extent that we can improve, include language in the email about that, you know, we will, and we'll, again, as I said, we'll seek feedback. But I don't think we want the email to be very long. We want it to get right to the point and, you know, and give people the information quickly so that they know that they're expected to respond.
I suppose just to explain... Michaeli Nalan, Black Knight, Dirty Filthy Registrar from Ireland. Just explain to Adam and Rob, who's also sitting at the table, just a bit of the background of where this came from. From the discussions within the working group, one of the areas of concern and an area where there were issues when it came to transfers between registrars was that certain registrars were very, that's the best way to put this, they weren't exactly the most responsive. So what could happen is that an illegitimate transfer, basically somebody who was hijacking domains, whatever, they would transfer to a very small registrar or registrar who hadn't exactly a good track record in terms of being responsive. It would then take days to get some kind of reply from them in order to be able to undo the transfer or basically sort the thing out, during which time name servers could have been changed, websites, email, all sorts of other things would have ceased to function. The underlying concept with this transfer emergency contact is to make it an obligation in those instances for somebody to respond. Now, that doesn't mean that, for example, if Two Cows has an issue with Momentous, that you guys just can't pick up the bloody phone and sort it out between you. The key thing is, if you can't pick up the phone, or in your case, you know, jump in the car, drive over and beat Adam over the head with something large, that there is an obligation.
Ottawa and Toronto are very far away from each other.
Well, looking at the way Adam kind of does things with skateboards, I'd hate to see what he does with a car. Whatever it was, you keep damaging yourself. But the point being that, you know, if you have good communication channels with the gaining and losing registrars and all that, there's no issue. You don't need to resort to this. But it's a case of where you do need to resort to it because you can't get an answer. You don't know who the hell to talk to. The transfer contact that you're finding in radar or whatever isn't of any use to you, then you can go down this route, which then means that if this keeps on happening, then Maggie Serrato, we're lucky to have in the room. Good morning, Maggie. Her team are then in a position to do something because there is actually a policy that is being breached. But again, the key thing is this is not to replace anything else, and of course there are still other policies with respect to the dispute of transfers. It's the emergency when you can't get in contact. Thanks.
Adam, did you have any other questions?
And just by way of kind of comment, both Adam and Rob have volunteered for IRTPC. Rob should introduce himself since we'll have to deal with him over the phone moving forward.
Hi, I'm Rob Villeneuve from Momentous, and I run the group of registrars for Momentous. I think I just sent my volunteer email in, so there you go. Look forward to working with everybody.
And Adam, who may not be known to others in the group.
I'm Adam Eisner from Two Cows. I run the domain name registrar business over at Two Cows.
Well, welcome on board. And we'll be talking a lot to each other, I'm sure. Looking on the room, any other issues people want to discuss or go ahead?
I suppose the other thing would be that it would be just following up on what I said during the meeting between compliance and the registrar stakeholder group the other day, that if Maggie and her team can share detailed information with respect to complaints around transfers, this would help. And also, as well, if we can work with Maggie and her team so that we're sure that they are collecting the right information. Because one of the things, it came up in a couple of sessions over the last 2 days, you know, part of the let's beat up on registrars, kind of love fest between GAC and various other bodies. Just because there was a large volume of complaints in relation to transfers does not necessarily mean that there is something either wrong with the policy or with the registrars affected. Because people can lodge a complaint, that does not necessarily mean that the complaint is valid. For example, a WHOIS complaint that we received about 12 months ago, as per ICANN policy, the WHOIS was perfectly valid. The fact that the contact details and the WHOIS were not the contact details that the person submitting the complaint would have liked to see is irrelevant, because that was a dispute between two third parties. But this, and it's the same kind of thing that with transfers, that there are going to be people complaining because they don't know how transfers work. They make certain assumptions. They assume that registrars can magically move domains into accounts with other registrars. I'm sure Adam and Rob and other people who are dialed in have had this kind of experience where somebody has kind of said, you know, why can't you move this domain to my account with GoDaddy? As if I can kind of wave a magic wand and just make it happen. So I think it's important that we, you know, get more information on some of these things, especially when it comes to the change of control.
I think it's a very good point, but you know, just want to point out as well, because, and I think it's part of a broader discussion that presumably the GNSO will have as well, because there's also an issue that was raised in the context of the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group to have better data. But at the same time, I think you need to point out that, of course, it's not really a compliance job to, you know, go through those lists and check. They did that once, and it took a lot of time for them to find that. You know, their job is to find out which are valid complaints and address those and solve them. So I think we need to find as well a better system to use the data that they get, but also look. I'm sure registrars get a lot of complaints or have data on that. You know, how can we make better use of that as well and put the whole picture together? Because presumably what we receive at ICANN is just, you know, a drop in the ocean, or at least just a part of actual issues that arise. So maybe we should start thinking as well of how we can work better with, you know, other data points and try to, you know, put that picture together and hopefully as well, you know, get, of course, the input from compliance. Or maybe, you know, I know there have been discussions previously as well on how that system can be improved so more valid data can be obtained to inform policy development. But, you know, at the same time, of course, it's not, you know, their core function to look at that. And there are a whole lot of other big issues that they're dealing with. So we need to make sure that we, you know, balance that.
I mean, Marika, I don't disagree. It's just that when you talk about a volume of complaints out of context, without putting it in the context, for example, the size of the registrar, I mean, I remember when the data was shared with us by David Giza a couple of years ago, it was very, very clear that a couple of the registrars whose names kept on cropping up, that they had a very small number of names on their accreditation, yet they had a disproportionately high number of complaints, whereas, you know, Two Cows, Enom, GoDaddy, Momentus are going to generate a certain number of complaints simply because of the sheer volume. It's the same with us. And, you know, our volumes would be in relation to .ie, for example. I mean, we run into issues all the time involving the IECC TLD because we're the largest registrar. And it's something that needs to be taken into account when compliance, say, or anybody else for that matter. Sorry, Maggie, not just picking on you, but just in general, if somebody just grabs a figure and just says, you know, there were 500 complaints against GoDaddy. Maybe there were. I'm sorry, James, who's in there. It's just, if they've got, number of names, then that's a tiny, 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 tiny percentage of the names with which there is a purported problem, which may not actually be a problem.
You know, I said it, I think it is, Marika, I think a very valid point. And I think, I don't know if we did it for the IRTP or for post-expiration, but at one point we did, you know, really scrub the data and really look at, indeed, at the issues, but that really took a lot of hours, you know, from the compliance staff to, you know, to put it together. I mean, I think it was very valid, the information we got, and really helpful to really identify, like, is this really an issue or not? And I think we found, yes, it is an issue. Even after scrubbing data, we do see that there is a real valid issue, but yeah.
It's the thing is this. I mean, if the you know, there are a lot of tools available to collect information and to analyze information. And ultimately, if things like transfers are constantly being identified as being a hot issue, then while I don't obviously enjoy kind of increasing workloads for people, I would say that, look, in this instance, if you're going to beat us over the head about something, then, you know, please give us quality information that we can work with. And, you know, the more that's given, the easier it is for us to identify which parts of the policy may need to be adjusted, which parts may need to be tweaked, or maybe it's a case simply of both registrars, registries, ICANN, ALAC, and whoever else, just educating end users more.
Okay, any other points? And, you know, just before we close off, I just would really like to thank those volunteers that have stuck with us through RTBA, RTB. Now we're going to see, you know, Sushi Michaela, I see that James on the call. So, you know, thank you very much for doing that. And, three more to go, so hang in there. Thank you all very much for coming, and this meeting is now closed.